Now to the story of a former nun, a hospice nurse and a chaplain to prisoners in Wormwood Scrubs. All the one person, I should hasten to add. But now 49-year-old Kate Tobin from Lismore in County Waterford has been diagnosed with advanced multiple sclerosis. She wants the right to die at a time of her own choosing. Valerie Cox is with me. Valerie, you have been to meet Kate Tobin.
Yes, indeed, Sean. And Kate has had an extraordinary life. But 3 years ago, she was diagnosed with multiple sclerosis and the disease has advanced very rapidly. She told me about her symptoms.
I have fallen 4 times this morning. I fell getting up. I've had 2 spasms whereby my legs or my whole body shakes all over. Lack of balance. I do wall walking, going to the kitchen. And that I'm pain. I'm in tremendous pain in my shoulders, my back and my legs.
And your speech has been affected?
Yes, my speech has been affected and it's getting worse. And I now have no saliva in my mouth.
Kate, you want to take a positive step in your own future?
Yes.
What do you want to do?
I want to have the ability to choose when I die. I don't want to have a nasty end. I don't want to end up in the wheelchair, which I will, and then I have to be fed artificially, which I will if the mouth goes much more. So I want to choose when I die. I don't want to have the medical interventions of having to be turned, having to be fed, having to catheterize. I just want to die peacefully.
Do you have any fear of death?
No, no, I was a hospice nurse for so long, the death was second nature to me. I was a nun for 12 years, so I've got no fear of God. I believe when I die, he won't say you're early, he'll say welcome home, you have suffered enough.
Kate, what frightens you about your illness, about the deterioration?
The fact that it's deteriorating so fast. I'm losing my identity. I'm losing my power to walk. My falls, I'm afraid I'll break something when I fall. I'm afraid to get out of bed. I'm afraid to walk. Just the whole thing and the pain gets to me most.
Your closest relative, I think, would be your brother, nieces, nephews. How do you think this would affect them?
I've told them all I'm dying. Even the kids know I'm dying. And they tell me how much they'd miss me. But this 10-year-old has helped to pick me up off the floor just this week. And it's sad to see a 10-year-old knowing how to pick an adult up off the floor.
Certainly doesn't sound like somebody who's only 49, Valerie. Now, I gather that one of Kate's more interesting jobs or parts of her career was when she worked as a chaplain in prisons, Durham and Wormwood Scrubs.
Yes, Sean, she was the only female chaplain. And during that time, she met and worked with some of the most notorious lifers, people like Myra Hindley and Rosemary West. Now, Kate was a very active woman, but now, as you can hear there, she finds her life limited and painful. She followed the Mary Fleming case very closely. And you will remember that Mary died just days before Christmas last year. Now, Kate says that she wants to see a change in the law to allow her to engage in voluntary euthanasia.
I would like the Irish government to choose people like me to have the ability to die if my doctor says there's nothing more to be done medically for me and I am dying, then surely I have the right to choose when I die.
Now, you followed Mary Fleming's court case with a lot of interest. Yeah. And during that court case, various palliative experts did say, look, your symptoms can be controlled, your pain can be controlled. You don't believe that?
No. No, my symptoms can't be controlled. No matter, I'm taking 42 tablets a day just to control my meds. I'm now on morphine for my pain. And the day the doctor put me on saliva gel to ease my ability to talk, but nothing is working, so there is no cure for MS, so I believe that I should have the ability to die.
If we had the legislation in this country so that you could die at a time of your own choice, have you any fears that that legislation could be abused by people?
Yeah, it could be. That's why I think that you need to produce papers for medical staff, and I don't think it should be a family decision, because some families could want a relative to die, some for money or that, and some families won't want a relative to die. I think it has to be a patient-doctor decision.
So that's her view there from Kate. Kate Hoban, Valerie. Now, I gather there's something in the works politically on that whole question.
Yes, there is, Sean. Now, you'll remember Tom Curran, who was Mary Fleming's partner. Fleming, who also suffered from multiple sclerosis, challenged the constitutionality of the ban on assisted suicide, lost the case, subsequently appealed it to the Supreme Court and lost that case. Now, Tom is the coordinator of Exit International Ireland, which describes itself as an end-of-life choices, information and advocacy organisation. And a group of people led by Tom is currently planning to bring a new bill before the Oireachtas.
The bill is almost drafted now. The wording has been finalised in the next couple of weeks, and we hope then to have a barrister look at the bill and format it in a form of a bill, because I don't know anything about putting bills together. It then has to go to the Bills Committee in the Oireachtas to make sure that there's nothing in it that they would have any problem with, and then we hope to present it.
Now, you have been getting quite a bit of support from some of our politicians.
Yes, from all walks of life. I mean, parties, independents. The Labour Party have said that they would support it. I met with Eamon Gilmore and he said as a party they would support it, but I'm not sure whether that's still the same situation or not. But the majority of support have come from independents. And the first one to come along was John Halligan. And John has been very instrumental in even putting the words together. Also, PILA, which is the Public Interest Law Alliance, which is part of FLAC, came forward and with four or five barristers that volunteered to help us, and they've been working away now all year putting the wording together. If it's presented as a private member's bill, John is the person who will do it, but there are other people. Stephen Donnelly is very supportive of it as well.
So Tom Curran there campaigning in the aftermath of Mary Fleming's passing. But again, the point is often made, Valerie, and we'll hear it, I think it argued later in the programme as well, that there's a danger in these situations, in such legislation or regimes. There's a risk of abuse.
Yes, indeed there is, Sean. And this has been the reasoning behind so many court decisions, both in the Fleming case and in other jurisdictions. They talk about the common good. And if we look to the High Court and the Fleming case, Judge Kearns, when he delivered the ruling, he said, even with the most rigorous system of legislative checks and balances to ensure in particular that the aged, the disabled, the poor, the unwanted, the rejected, the lonely, the impulsive, the financially compromised and the emotionally vulnerable would not disguise their own personal preferences and elect to hasten death so as to avoid a sense of being a burden on family and society. I mean, that really is the crucial point. And I asked Tom Curran himself about the risk of abuse in his new bill.
Most of our time has been spent with safeguards. We spent months, nearly the year. The bill itself, the wording of the bill for itself is very, very simple. But it's the built-in safeguards that make sure that people wouldn't have the opportunity to abuse it.
So you wouldn't see it being as liberal as in some other jurisdictions?
No, the most, I suppose, obvious place for us to look at for inspiration is Oregon, where they have a very good bill and they have very tight controls there. We wouldn't consider the situation that they have in Holland or Belgium, because that just, I wouldn't expect us to be that liberal but also I don't think it would suit the way we live and the morals that we have here.
So that's Tom Curran there. And Valerie, thank you very much indeed for that report. On the line now, Professor Tony O'Brien, a consultant physician in palliative medicine and former chair of the Council of Europe Expert Committee on Palliative Care. He was one of the expert witnesses who gave evidence in the Fleming case in the High Court. He has 26 years experience with some 30,000 dying or suffering patients. Professor O'Brien, good morning to you.
Good morning, Sean. How are you?
No, fine, thank you. Your argument, or I think one of the points you would make, is the basic question is, do we want to achieve good palliative care for individual patients?
Yeah, listening to the account of the patient at the top of your segment there, describing her pain and her distress and indeed her fear. And her anticipatory distress at what she envisages will unfold before her. I mean, that is very disturbing and at a personal level, very distressing. Now, palliative care can go a great way to help support people in such circumstances. Of course, we cannot take away the underlying problem. We can't take away the underlying disease, the multiple sclerosis in this situation. But there's a great deal that can be done to help support people to alleviate their distress, not for the purpose solely of alleviating their distress, but so that people would use that time to whatever purpose that they choose. So in a sense, palliative medicine, palliative care is a great enabler. It seeks to, by means of pain control, symptom control, emotional, spiritual support, and so on, it seeks to create a circumstance whereby people can actually live the life they choose to live in the manner they choose to live it. And the core philosophy, I suppose, is rooted in a view that we're all going to die one day. But when I say that, the emphasis is on the one. It's on one day. And we try to ensure that each and every day from this moment up to that time, up to the end of our natural life, that we create the scope and the opportunity for people to live their life as fully and as meaningfully as they possibly can do.
Yes, but we heard Kate Tobin there say that she does not want to end up in a situation where she has to be turned, has to be fed, has to be catheterized. She just simply does not want to live that existence.
Yeah, and that fear of increasing dependency is very, very real amongst people. It's a tremendous anxiety and tremendous fear. And again, palliative care can't change the reality, but it can offer all the necessary support. And in the judgment of the High Court, as articulated by Nicholas Kearns, the president of the High Court, he observed that if the court could tailor-make a solution which would suit the needs of Miss Fleming alone, without any possible implications for third parties or society at large, then he said there might be a good deal to be said for the case. But the court could not be so satisfied. And that is the issue. It really is a balance between an individual right and a societal need. So if the 4.5 million people, whatever it is, on this island all lived in separate individual islands, we could do exactly as we please because our actions would have no implications or consequences for others. However, if we live in a society which by definition requires there's a respect, there's an interreliance, there's an interdependence, then we have to be very mindful that our rights could impact on others. And we've had lots of examples in my personal experience, many patients who feel that they are indeed a burden to their family and their friends. So the motivation in seeking an early death is not so much to relieve their own suffering immediately, but so as to prevent what they believe represents an unbearable burden. It could be an emotional burden or a financial burden on their family and those close to them.
Is part of your argument then, Professor O'Brien, that allowing for circumstances or allowing or introducing a law that would cater for people like Kate Tobin would ipso facto, by virtue of its passage through the Oireachtas, put pressure on people who didn't want to go the same route?
Absolutely, absolutely. I mean, this is sometimes represented as a slippery slope, that once you start changing the circumstances, then you're on a very slippery slope and the whole thing will escalate. This is not a slippery slope argument. This is a fundamental, the most fundamental paradigm shift in the way in which clinicians have engaged with patients over the ages. And we already have in this country a major problem of suicide. We have over 500 deaths by suicide every year. So we already have a major problem in circumstances where people choose to end their own life by their own means and in their own time. In fact, the case against suicide was beautifully, exquisitely presented by young Donald Walsh. You may remember that young boy, 16-year-old boy from Kerry.
Yeah, but are you comparing? You're not necessarily comparing situations that are in fact comparable. He was a young guy of 16, as you say, with his whole life before him, or it should have been you in the normal course of things. Here's somebody, albeit not yet 50, but for whom life has become unbearable. And she makes the point that the palliative care and pain relief just isn't working for her.
Well, I'm not quite certain that was the message, to be honest with you. I think what I was hearing in the clip that you played was much more anticipatory distress. And referring back to the Marie Fleming case, there was a fascinating interview with her partner and with her daughter published in the Irish Times on the 4th of May 2013. And they both independently observed that Marie Fleming did not have a death wish. Her partner reported in that newspaper that Marie didn't want to die. In fact, he said she wants to live. But what she wanted to do was to control the way in which she dies. And in an even more poignant commentary, her daughter observed how Marie Fleming had first indicated her wish for an early death 10 years earlier. And her daughter said in that interview, thank God we managed to change her mind, because she would have missed out on so many years and all the younger grandchildren. And she again insisted she wanted to live. So this is not in any sense about exerting the right to die. At one level, it seems a bit crazy to talk about a right to die when it's the only certainty we all have and that we all share together. This really is around choosing the time of one's dying. And it's more than that. In the medical context, it then presupposes that clinicians and physicians will take on that function of ending somebody's life. And that's moving into very, very difficult and very dangerous territory indeed.
Professor O'Brien, thank you very much indeed for joining us. That's Professor Tony O'Brien there, consultant physician in palliative medicine and former chair of the Council of Europe Expert Committee on Palliative Care.
Today with Sean O'Rourke on RTE Radio 1.